fell in love in high school.
Yeah, we were high school sweethearts.
But then after our junior year, his parents moved away.
But I never forgot her.
You never forgot me?
No, her face was burned on my brain. And it was 34 years later that I was walking down Broadway and I saw her come out of Toughen Eddie's.
We both looked at each other, and it was just as though not a single day had gone by.
She was just as beautiful as she was at 16.
He was just the same. He looked exactly the same.
This week I intended to find another couple from Connect Church to do this video, but I didn't.
But you didn't.
I didn't.
Just like you didn't fix the clothing rod in my closet.
But I meant to.
But you didn't.
I intended to.
But you never did it.
Well?
It's still broken. It's still hanging by one side.
I thought about it.
All my clothes are hanging to one side, sloping.
Well, I thought about it.
But you didn't do it.
Nope.
And we're doing the video.
Hello? It's the wonderful art of procrastination, so I think we all suffer from that. Well, I just wanted to say thank you for coming today. Happy July 4th. And let you know, just to recap where we've been in this message series, we've been talking about attraction. We've been talking about seasons or timing in a relationship. Honeymooning, conflict. Today we're going to be talking about intention versus action, looking at what the Song of Solomon has to say, what God has to say about relationships. This is the fifth message, and as the foundation for this, as the point for this, is just do it. Intention versus action, just do it. And kind of as the foundation to kind of put the talk in perspective today, I'd like us to really keep in focus this statement of we judge others by their actions instead of their intentions. And we desire to be judged by our intentions and not by our actions. It's an incredible double standard that we think is appropriate for our own lives. I guess an example for this from my own life is Emily and I, she had an appointment one day in town that she had to run to, and she said, "Honey, I'll be back in about an hour." And I was like, "Great." Then inside, I was just like, "I'll do some work around the house." Anna Lee was down for a nap. It was a great time. It was quiet. About an hour goes by, and she wasn't home yet. So I start to think, okay, where is she at? Another 15 minutes go by. I already called her a couple times. You know how your mind seems to kind of race to that place of, oh my goodness, what's going on here? And the irrational becomes the only exceptional option. And so I called her again, and finally, about 20 minutes, half hour later, she comes walking through the door, and I was kind of like, "Where have you been? I was so worried." And she's like, "Well, I'm sorry, I was in a conversation with somebody, but I came home as soon as I could. And the roads are really busy, so driving a stick shift, I really didn't want to talk on the phone." So I was like, okay, I can handle that. But still, her intention, you know, was to be home in an hour, but she wasn't. And I was a little kind of upset, worried, bothered by, why weren't you home in an hour? Why were you late? Fast forward another 3 to 4 months. And I was going out to play some basketball with the guys. And she said, "Honey, when will you be back?" And I said, "Oh, I'll be back at 5. And she said, "Good, I'll have dinner ready." And so she's 3 months pregnant by this time. Just keep that in mind as this story progresses. And so I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "Are you sure? Is that going to be enough time for you to play, to go and do this?" I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll be back. I'll be back by 5. It'll be cool." And we're finishing up a game. And the guy's like, "Let's play one more." I'm like, "It's 4:45. We're only playing to 11 points. Win by 2. Should have plenty of time to do this." As my intention, though, I was like, okay, maybe if it gets closer to 5, I should give her a call. I intended to. But as the game progressed, we got to like 9 points to 10, 10 points to 10, and then we just kept going back and forth. We could never quite, you know, one team never quite won. I thought a couple times, I probably should stop, just give Emily a quick call or a text or something, letting her know, "Honey, I'm running a little late, I'll be home shortly." My intention was to do that, but I never quite did. I mean, how do you really stop the game? Be like, "Okay, guys, I got to stop the game and call my wife." You know, you don't really look too tough doing that. So I guess I kind of sissied out on the whole thing. So finish up the game, kind of say our goodbyes, and I come walking home at about 6:30. I intended to call. My actions didn't quite follow that up. I kept a pregnant woman waiting for an hour and a half past what she wanted to wait. And she had to feed our little two-year-old, too, at the time, her dinner. And then she waited for me. Honey, you're absolutely amazing. Thank you. I walked through the door, and she was justifiably upset. Like, why are you late? What took you so long? You should have called and let me know you were running late. I'd hoped that she would have just said, well, your intention to call was enough. I understood that the game went long and that was okay, but my actions didn't follow that. I think there's lots of many stories in our pop culture that have these stories that grab a lot of good headlines, where it seems that others who fail to have their intentions be solidified by their actions, that these actually make for good stories. People are like, okay, it's either a humorous story or a tragedy where they intend to do something and the way they act it out just doesn't work. One of my favorite stories recently about good intentions that failed to follow through was this guy named Gary Faulkner. And some of you may know the name. He's gone to Pakistan to bring bin Laden to justice. And that was his intention. He had a good intention here, but he didn't do it. I heard the other night that he was going to be on Letterman, so we stayed up and watched it. I'd like, just brought the clip so we can kind of learn a little more about Mr. Faulkner.
How many times have you launched this mission to go to Pakistan to find Osama bin Laden?
Oh, I mean, they have the airlines and stuff going 7 times, but I also tried a couple times on a boat.
On a boat?
Or two different boats. Yeah.
Well, then, tell us geographically, what do you leave from L.A.? Is that where you're San Pedro?
Actually, I left out of San Diego Harbor.
San Diego, yeah. Well, that's a nice harbor.
Yeah, it's a very nice harbor, unless they try and stop you.
Yeah. Oh, did they try to stop you down there?
They tried, but it didn't work.
Yeah. And who tried to stop you?
The Harbor Patrol.
And why did they try to stop you?
I didn't have a life jacket. I didn't have a radio. I didn't have flares. I was illegal as all get out in boat terms.
And without life jackets, without flares, and without a radio, you were going to go down the... How were you going to get to Pakistan? What is that route?
Well, the route is really kind of like you just head in a direction and you'll eventually hit land, and then from there you go from there.
I see. So you had actually put some thought into this trip.
Hey, high tech here.
Yeah. Now, when you get to Pakistan, how do you know what to do without getting into trouble?
Not a clue.
Not a clue.
Not a clue.
Not a clue.
I didn't know anything about the Pakis. I didn't know any. I just knew that I had somebody I was going after, and mm-hmm.
I think it's Pakistanis, isn't it?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I know some people say politically and stuff. I say the Pakis because we're like that. We're cool. They don't take, like, we get very, very sensitive on things. Mm-hmm. It's not like that because these people are so different. I mean, very warm and open. And that's really what helped encourage me even more to keep going on is just their aid and seeing that, you know, I would walk around, I had so much tea and cookies and everything else, I'm still peeing chai tea, you know? I mean, I just...
Once again, I'd like the record to show that I said Pakistani.
Yes.
I said Pakistani. Do you plan to go back and do this again?
Well, it's not over with yet, Dave. We're getting ready to go. This right here is only the form to let the world know the two heavyweights are ready to fight, and we're going to see who's standing at the end of this program. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I think many of us can relate to some of the awkward tension that we saw up there of even in our own lives. I thought as I was watching this, I kept thinking to myself, there's times where I have an intention to do something good, and my actions don't portray that at all, or they don't bring that to fruition. And just the kind of the interplay between he and the audience there and David Letterman really kind of have that awkward sense of he's just not understood by that group of people. That his intentions were good, but his actions failed. Today we'll look at the Song of Solomon and see what God has to say about closing the gap between our intentions and our actions. I want to look at 3 thoughts that I think, although they're incredibly simple, and we may say, I may know these. I think in not just dating or marriage relationships, but in any relationship we have, these can be absolutely and completely life-changing. If you have your Bibles, you can open up to Song of Solomon, chapter 7, and we're going to start in verse 1. And while you're turning there, if you could repeat this with me, this is the first thought. If you think something good, say it. Let's say it with me. If you think something good, say it. I think we can do that better. One more time. If you think something good, say it. Wonderful. Reminds me of a speaker I saw in college one time. He said, repeat after me, I will learn to think for myself. Took us a while, too. Now let's look at this in chapter 7, verses 1 through 3. This is the husband talking. And he says to the bride, how beautiful are your sandaled feet, O queenly maiden. Your rounded thighs are like jewels, the work of a skilled craftsman. Your navel is perfectly formed, like a goblet filled with mixed wine. I want to stop there just to explain this a little bit. I kind of read that at first and thinking, he's saying her stomach looks like a big bowl? I'm like, that's a little awkward. I think I might get slapped for saying that. But as I began to look more at what this is actually saying, the navel was the center or the seat of emotions in Israel at the time. That's what that was considered. Kind of like I got a gut feeling about this. That's where what the navel was considered, where the emotions kind of lie, where you had those types of feelings. And wine was considered the very best of God's blessings. So what he's saying here is actually something really sweet. He's saying, you're the greatest emotional blessing I've ever known. You're God's richest blessing for me. You are my best friend. He was giving voice to his thoughts. Let's carry on to verse 3. He says, between your thighs lies a mound of wheat bordered with lilies. Your breasts are like two fawns, twin fawns of a gazelle. Now, if you remember from some past weeks, Russ has been reading through some of the other compliments that he's been giving her. Before, he's been kind of going from the head down. And this week, he figures, okay, I'll change things up and I'll go from the feet up. He just was kind of getting creative and expressing that way. And he's still stuck on that whole gazelle and fawn thing. I'm not quite sure where he's going there. But anyway, what is he doing here? He's speaking words of admiration, words of affection, and words of affirmation. Proverbs 18:21 tells us that the power of life and death is in the tongue. If we're speaking words of affirmation, affection, and admiration, we're speaking life. Constructive criticism is okay, but we also need to be speaking good things, thinking good things and then telling the people. It's like going and searching for a gift for someone, purchasing it, wrapping it up, and then leaving it at your house, never giving it to them. That's the equivalent, really, of doing this. We need to, when we think good things, say it to the people so that they can actually be able to unwrap that gift and receive the blessing from what you're thinking about. When we don't do this, when we don't tell them something good, I think people generally will assume something bad. I know for me, probably even as I'm getting ready to go home today after the service, I'll give Emily a call, and I'll be running through my head, did I do an okay job? Did I do an okay job? If she doesn't start saying something, did I really screw this one up? And just, I know my mind will go there. Even Sunday mornings, sometimes after worship, I kind of have this feeling of, did I do an okay job? And my mind starts to run to that place of, did I do something bad? But when she gives me these encouraging words of, honey, you did great. Worship was wonderful today. You did a good job. It builds me up. I know that she's thinking something good, so I'm not having to assume the worst. Let's look at how this is happening in chapter 7, verse 5. This is the husband speaking again, and he says to the wife, your head is as majestic as Mount Carmel, and the sheen of your hair radiates royalty. The king is held captive by its tresses. Now, I'd just like to make a point. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, Russ was talking about how he said her hair was like goat's hair. And he's finally learned, I think, at this point to realize, okay, I need to say this in a little better way, where he says your hair, the sheen of your hair radiates royalty. It's kind of like, guys, and I know there's some NASCAR fans here, and we're not going to get into the whole thing if NASCAR is a sport or not. I think good drivers should be able to turn both left and right. But it's like, guys, you're watching your race and you're thinking, I'm going to tell my wife how great she is or whatever. And you think to yourself, honey, you're like a great pit crew. And what you're thinking is she changes my tires and she gives me gas. She may not take it that way. So what do we need to do here? This is what he's done. He's changed his thing of saying, "Honey, you're great. This is why I love you." And he's saying appropriate things like, "You're beautiful. You're wonderful. I love you." So just, I guess, a word of advice: don't compare her to NASCAR. Let's look in chapter 7, verse 5, or at this passage again. It says that the king is held captive by his tresses. Now, that word in the Hebrew is actually asar, A-C-A-R. And what it means is to yoke or hitch, to bind, to harness, or a prisoner put in bonds. What he's saying is basically, I'm a prisoner of your looks, of you, because I love you so much, because my love for you is so strong. He's telling her, this is how I see you. He's speaking good things to her so that she will not assume the worst. Let's look on in verses 7 and 8 here. He says to her again, "You are slender like a palm tree, and your breasts are like its clusters of fruits. I said, I will climb the palm tree and take hold of its fruit." Now, this verse is really funny to me because this was actually in a worship song when I was in college, and we always had such an awkward time thinking about this in relation to God. Then he says, "May your breasts be like grape clusters and the fragrance of your breath like apples." She hears him saying all of these wonderful things, and then she responds in verse 10. She says, "I am my lover's, and he claims me as his own." She understood. He thinks these good things about me. He's speaking these words of admiration, of affection, of affirmation. He's speaking life into her. She's understanding that. It's good. Let's go on to one more thing I'd like to say here. So often, I know early in my marriage, early in my relationship with Emily, I remember the first time that I told her, "I love you." Now, she knew that I'd said, "I'll never say I love you to a person to a person I'm dating until in the next breath I know I could say, will you marry me?" And we were sitting up at Highlight on actually kind of a fallen tree looking out over the lake. I just remember looking into her eyes and thinking, this is the woman that I want to marry. And it was just this wonderful time. I just looked and I said, "I love you." And it was just this incredible emotional, wow, I can't believe I said this, and this is right, and this is great. We've been married 5 years, and over that time, the emotional impact of that phrase has lost some of its meaning. You say things like, "Well, I've got to go now. I love you." "Well, thank you for a wonderful dinner. I love you." And I think it becomes not cheapened, but just lessened, because we just put these, it's just kind of tagged on at the end, letting me know I still love you, but it's kind of an afterthought in some ways. How can we add meaning again to this phrase by saying, "I love you," and then adding, "because"? And I was thinking, what can I say about Emily today? "Emily, I love you because you're not high maintenance." I do. I love that. I need that. "And I love you because you take the complicated and make it so simple." I think by saying this, not even just to someone in a relationship, but also in friendships, we can tell people this, and it adds such meaning and a dynamic to that expression of it. Let's carry on to the next point. And if you say this with me, if you think something special, do it. Let's say that together. If you think something special, do it. Now, I think that this is a great thing. There are two specific actions that we can apply to do this. And this really applies not just to, once again, dating or romantic relationships, but it also, I think, applies to every area of life. The first thing, and we see this in verses 11 and 12, is purposeful time, spending purposeful time together. In 11, this is the wife talking, and she says, "Come, my love, let us go out to the fields and spend the night among the wildflowers. Let us get up early and go to the vineyards to see if the grapevines have budded, if the blossoms have opened, and if the pomegranates have bloomed. There I will give you my love." You know, what is she doing here? She's saying, "I'm going to set aside time where we can purposely do things together." Emily and I do this with date nights when we get them, and we cherish our date nights. I know as far as this applying to friends, in college we had a group of guys, we'd spend purposeful time together. It was, we called it a record Saturday. There was it was Springfield Trading Depot. is what the name of this pond, kind of a big flea markets were, but they called them STD. And there was the STD East, West, North, and South. So we go to the STDs looking for records to buy, like old 33s and 45s. But that's the time that we spent together. Every Saturday, we'd go out, and we'd shop for records and just hang out together. It was just this wonderful, purposeful time that we really built a lot of relationships together. I have a lot of pictures, actually, in college of just different records, like Pink Floyd's The Wall that we found for like $4. So it was just kind of a fun time that we spent purposeful time together. Secondly, if we look in verse 13, there's thoughtful acts toward each other. If you look in verse 13, it says, in the field, once again, there the mandrakes give off their fragrance, and the finest fruits are at our door, new delights as well as old, which I have saved for you, my lover. Now, there's a picture of a mandrake that's going to be coming up. Now, what these were, it's basically this, it's the root that looked like a man, and they were considered an aphrodisiac, but they were also considered to help with fertility. But what she's saying is, you know, here's this aphrodisiac, here's this wonderful thing here, the giving off the fragrance, the fine fruits that are at our door, new delights as well as old. She's saying, I've put a lot of thought into this plan, what I've thought about for this our time out together. These thoughtful acts. Now, the power behind it is the thought that was put into it, not necessarily the action. There's so many thoughtful things that we can truly do. I know it's not necessarily the amount of money you spend, say, on flowers, but it's the thought that you've got flowers for someone. It's the thought behind it that truly matters. We need to do these thoughtful acts for our friends to show, I'm thinking something special. I'm doing it. Now, thirdly, the third thought I'd like to look at is, and if you'd repeat this with me, if you want something different, be it. Let's say that together. If you want something different, be it. And this is in verse 1 of chapter 8. And this is the young woman, she's the wife, she's speaking again. She says, oh, I wish you were my brother who nursed at my mother's breast. Then I could kiss you no matter who was watching and no one would criticize me. Now, the first time I read that, I was a little creeped out. I was like, what's exactly going on here? Like, that may work south of the Mason-Dixon line, but up here in Montana, it just doesn't quite fly. We can edit that on the tape, right? But seriously, when I looked into this, I saw that what she was actually saying in the culture of that time, it was inappropriate for a man to kiss his wife in public. It was considered lewd. It was considered just way over the top. But a brother and a sister could give each other a kiss to show their affection for each other. So she's saying, I wish that I could change things so they'd be different, so that you could be my brother, so that in public I could show you affection at all times. And I would receive no criticism. She wanted to make things different. I know my dad, I think, I was looking at what is an example of this in my life. And I thought, when I was growing up, my dad went back for his master's at Penn State University. I grew up in Pennsylvania. And I was probably 11 or 12, and Penn State was about 2 hours south of where we were living. And he had to do a year of a residency down there. So he'd go down Monday during the week, he'd stay down there, and he'd come back Friday night as soon as his class was done. And my dad had decided, this conscious decision of, I want something to be different with my family. They're making a huge sacrifice this year to allow me to go down to fulfill this year of requirements, further education. And he did something different. As soon as he'd get home on Friday nights, he wouldn't start into homework. Pretty much the entire weekend, while my brother and I were awake, he would spend time with us. If he needed to help us with our homework, if it was outside, you know, playing baseball, whatever it was, he'd be hanging out with us, spending time with mom and my brother and I, because he realized something needed to be different. And he spent time. He was the one who said, I will be the one who makes the change. And that's been kind of one of those pivotal years, I think, in our family history, of my dad saying, I'm going to be there no matter what the cost, do this. And he was. And it was such an amazing time for us. If you want something different, be it. And the story that reminded me of this, I had a friend, this is kind of a sad story, in college who came to me one day, and this was at Bible college where I went to. It was a liberal arts college, but he said, "John, I wanted to be a Bible, I wanted to be a pastor, but even though God's called me to this, I feel I love to drink too much. And so I'm not going to be a pastor." And he got into drinking heavily. He finished up school close after that point when I did, and we kind of, you know, moved on, and he heavily into drinking. He did some recreational drugs and those things. I was just really just sad of, wow, you know, what's happened? Here's a man whose intention. He knew what God's call in his life was, to be a pastor. But his actions never followed through with it. Now, I'd like to say, just with that thought in mind of seeing him not doing this, I'd like to challenge you today not to let the intentions, not to let what God has called you to pass by, but to take those next steps to accomplish these things, to fulfill, to make your intentions be followed through, to meet with the actions. I just ask you, what are your next steps today? Now, the three thoughts that we had talked about of the, if you think something good, say it. If you think something special, do it. If you want something different, be it. Of those three, I'd like you to write down a card. You know, what do I need to do as this next step? What to draw my intentions to be met by my actions? What do I need to do? And secondly, for your relationships to be successful, to close the gap between good intentions and actions, is there another specific commitment that you must make and keep? It's pretty open. I know we're all at different places today. But just, what do you need to do to make your intentions meet your actions? And when you're done writing, I'd like if you could just to go ahead and when you finish that, just to set that aside. And I want to tell you the rest of the story of my friend Tyler. From all the reports that I'd heard a year or so after I graduated, he'd just completely, really fallen off the deep end. I never knew where he was. And then 3 years or so after graduation, he called me up and he said, "Hey, I've got to talk to you." He began to tell me how there was a pastor who began to meet with him on Saturday mornings. He said, "I usually go either stoned or hungover, and we just sit and we just talk. And he just loved me back to Jesus." And now he's got a family. He's attending church. He's a Christ follower. He said, "I know I had made wrong decisions. My intentions were never followed up on my actions. But now he's changed his life, where he's saying, I'm going to choose to do the right thing." I don't know if he's a pastor. We've lost touch since then. But he's back following Christ. And I just see that as such a victory. Jesus gives us second chances. And that's my friend's story here. And I just like to encourage you. You may feel I've made wrong decisions. My intentions have not met with my actions. Jesus gives us second chances. And I just like, you know, if we could, is there anybody here today who would say, "I'd like to make a decision to follow Christ. I say, I'd like that second chance. I know what God has called me to." And is there anybody here who would like to make that decision today? Okay. I guess secondly, after that, I'd just like to say a quick prayer for us, that we go forth from here. This isn't necessarily a message today where it's, come up and receive prayer to do this. This is a message, I believe, of what are your next steps, and let's go do this. By us connecting our intentions to our actions, we can go and we can make a change. We can begin to, when we think things good, say them. When we think something special, to do them. And if we want something to be different, we can be the ones who truly make those changes. I guess as the band comes up, I'll pray, and then we'll do one more song talking, really, and make this your prayer. It's called The Blessing. It's about what we can be to others for Christ. But let me just pray about that God would help us to turn our intentions into action. Lord, I thank you, God, for your love for us, that you've given us second chances, God, to serve you, to follow you. I just ask that the decisions that people need to make today, God, that you would just truly allow them, God, give them wisdom, give them understanding to know which decisions to make, God, to draw draw those intentions to their actions. I just thank you and praise you. May we go forth today to celebrate. In Jesus' name.